Hey, everybody, welcome back. Thanks for joining us as we start the week together in the last chapter of Luke, though it is, as Luke's chapters tends to be, fairly long, but we nevertheless are moving toward the culmination of this gospel. We've been working on it for a long time. We didn't slow ourselves down enough that these stories will coincide with Easter, but we're close. We're not for starting a year ago.
September, right? Yeah, I think we started in September, so yeah.
This last September?
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, for starting several months ago, not a terrible guess. But we today move into the 24th chapter of Luke, and this is Luke's rendition of the Easter story. Luke does an interesting thing here that we'll talk about probably tomorrow. But before we do that, let's get to just his resurrection story, which I'll read for you, then we'll come back and talk through. On the first day of the week, early at dawn, they came to the tomb, taking the spices that they had prepared. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they went in, they didn't find the body. While they were perplexed about this, suddenly two men in dazzling clothes stood beside them. The women were terrified and bowed their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He's not here. He has risen. Remember how he told you while he was still in Galilee, the Son of Man must be handed over to sinners and be crucified on the third day to rise again." Then they remembered his words, and returning from the tomb, they told all of this to the 11 and to the rest. Now it was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other women with them who told this to the apostles. But the words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them. But Peter got up and ran to the tomb. Stooping and looking in, he saw the linen cloth by themselves, and then he went home, amazed at what had happened. So, you know this. Again, if you're a Bible person, if you're a church person, you know this. Every Easter story in the four Gospels has its own nuance, its own thing that it emphasizes, its own sort of character. And I think we see that in Luke, though I think we'll make a good case today that that's connected to the things that Luke has shown us consistently. So the gist of the story, because of the Sabbath, they have to wait to prepare Jesus' body. They go to do it on Sunday. They find when they're there, the stone has been rolled away. Remember that Luke hasn't mentioned a stone at this point, but we fill that gap in from other places, from other stories. And there's this wonderful word, while they were perplexed. In other words, why they considered this. And if you would jump all the way back to the story of Jesus' birth, we will remember that when the shepherds showed up, Mary pondered these things in her heart. That's the idea here. They're perplexed. They're questioning what it means. When suddenly two men in clothes, angels, is the simplest way to think about this, show up and announce this thing to them. He's not here. And they remind them of the things Jesus said. And the women, Mary and Joanna, as well as maybe some others who aren't named, they're so excited. They return, they rush from the tomb. They go and find the disciples, the 11 now titled, and share the news with them. And this is the part of this that I think is vintage Luke, is that Luke would love the idea. He's not the only one to do this, but Luke would love the idea of the women being the first hearers. That's a shocking, it doesn't sound shocking to us because we're familiar with the story. It really is a shocking development in the story itself, that the first witnesses are women who, with apologies to our female listeners, are not in Jesus' day considered reliable witnesses in regard to kind of testifying and bearing witness. So the idea that it is women who who carry the news to the disciples is, I think, a detail that Luke would have leaned into.
I couldn't agree more, Clint. I think that the reality of that is lost on us in some ways, but I actually think that if we look closely enough, we can see that embedded directly in Luke's account itself. And let's just take a look at that here. He says, verse 11, "These words, the witness of these women, seemed to the disciples an idle tale, and they didn't believe them." And I think that right there gives a nod to exactly what you're saying, that when the women come to give an account, only one of them, as Luke tells the story. Now, John is going to tell this story a little bit differently than what Luke does. But as Luke gives us this story, it's Peter who then rushes off, runs to the tomb, and takes the evidence of the women with enough seriousness that he's going to explore it himself. And of course, when he goes and sees the linen cloths by themselves, he goes home amazed. Clint, that's another detail I think that's worth pointing out, is that if one had stolen Jesus's body, as was a very popular thing to claim in that first generation of believers, then there would be no linen cloths left in the tomb. One would not take a body out of the linen cloth. So the idea is, not only is there no body, but the thing that was wrapped around that body remains. The cloths themselves are left in the tomb. And so this is another evidence that would have been on offer to the fact that something had happened besides some sort of trickery or some sort of grave robbing. No, in this case, as we have just farther up here in the text, Clint, we, the reader, and our questions about the authenticity of this story are really answered in some of these details. And then we are asked the same question, why are you looking for the living among the dead? He's not here. And that becomes, I think, for Luke, not just the question offered to these women, but the question offered to all believers after. Why are you looking for the Jesus who is not dead, but continues to live? That's the promise of resurrection. It's the first word after the word of death.
This resurrection narrative and all of them, all four of the Gospels' versions of the resurrection, I think really bring us to the same point, Michael, which is to say that there are lots of questions. And if you want to filter these stories and look for differences between them, you will find them. You'll find different details. That's troubling to some people. I think we'll have a conversation probably down the road a few days about what that does and doesn't mean. But I think it, in the upside, it keeps us from the idea that we understand exactly what's happening here. It keeps us from the idea that we can make sense of it, and that we can fit it into a box, and that we can, as if we need to defend it. The gospel tells us a very mysterious story about this man called Jesus, the Son of God, through the faith of the text, that goes into the grave as a dead person, a dead man, hung on the cross by people who knew how to kill people. And yet, when his people go looking for him, they find not death, but the promise of life. Why are you looking for the living among the dead? And we can use that as a springboard, but I think the mystery of the story is preserved in this kind of less than perfect symmetry between all the versions of it. It is supposed to be troubling. It is supposed to be shocking. It is supposed to be confusing. And ultimately, rather than proving our way to it, it becomes a decision of faith. We believe this or we don't believe this. We put our trust in it or we don't. And I think Luke gives us a beautiful example of that. These women, They take this newfound joy. They take this story. They have seen angels, and they go and tell the disciples. And the disciples say, that doesn't sound right. This seemed an idle tale to them, yep. And they did not believe them. Fascinating that right here in a resurrection story, the first recipients of the story do not believe it. And so if that's true in the moment,
right,
we can't be blamed for bringing some questions to the text. But ultimately, those questions are not answered by details. They're not answered by word studies and symmetries and interlinears of the four Gospels. They're answered by faith. And I think the Gospel writers do a really nice job of pushing that question on us.
I think that there are some details of the story that are invitations to us as the reader as well. And I just want to point out one here right from the start. Look at verse 6. Remember how Jesus told you while he was in Galilee that the Son of Man must be handed over to sinners, be crucified, and on the third day rise again. That's a powerful word, remember. Because to the women, it functions as an invitation to look back over their life and time with Jesus and to survey the breadth of those teachings and then to see that the thing that they see in front of themselves right now, this shocking, unbelievable thing, that is the very thing that Jesus had been preparing them for the entire time. It becomes that light bulb moment, that aha opportunity in which a thing that seems disjunctive or surprising becomes an opportunity to see the truth of everything that had built up to that point as they stood there. The other thing that it serves to do, and I think that we should be very, very clear in this, is that the remember how he told you also gives us, the reader of Luke, the recipients of this gospel, this telling of the life of Jesus, an invitation to ourselves go back and see how that case was laid out. Because Luke, of course, all the gospel writers are doing this, Clint, but Luke certainly has provided for us a reliable and consistent record of the number of times that Jesus did explicitly say this thing. And so for us, the remembering doesn't necessarily look like us going back and remembering, you know, that time that we had dinner with him on the Sea of the Galilee and that time that we were talking on the way to Jerusalem. No, what we remember are the times specifically chosen by Luke and cataloged in this book in which Jesus said these explicit and exact things. And this provides, I think, for us a kind of narrative summing up. All of the stuff that came before is realized here in this moment. It's realized in the moment of the empty tomb. It has now come to pass. The stuff that Jesus said would be now is. And everything on the other side of that opens into a whole new kind of reality, a whole new kind of life. And Clint, we shouldn't forget, of course, that Acts is part two of the book of Luke, so it's going to tell the story of what comes on the other side of the grave. But this is a fulcrum point. The cross and the grave, they stand at the center of this important story. Everything that came before speaks to it, and everything that comes after it will be referenced by it. And that's the way that Luke has constructed the narrative for us to see the reality of that.
It's perhaps more true in the Old Testament in terms of language, but the word remember here in Greek does have a sense of not just call to mind, but to understand. So when the angel tells the women to remember the things he said, it's more than just that they have forgotten something, some comment. It's that they have not understood. And again, I think Luke, through the telling of this story, is asking us the same. What do you understand of Christ? And then, you know, his resurrection account ends with Peter got up and ran to the tomb and looked in, and he went home amazed at what had happened. Now, again, you have the idea of perplexed. You don't yet have the idea of understand. You don't have yet the idea of connecting the pieces of what was with what now is. This is an entirely new reality. This is unique. This is novel in human history and certainly in human religion and faith. And so these men and women are now on uncharted waters. They are navigating a thing that not only did they not expect, they don't yet understand. And so, we say this a lot, but it is a difficulty for us to manufacture that because we are accustomed to the story. And as we get accustomed to the story, sometimes it loses its ability to floor us and to just perplex us. And so as best as possible, we have to try and re-enter this mysterious, strange tale each time we encounter it so that it asks us the right questions and so that hopefully it helps us understand what we are putting our faith in and who it is that we're giving our trust.
So, Clint, I think a really interesting detail that is maybe emphasized in greater detail in other Gospels, but is present here in this one, and I want to point it out, is not only were the women perplexed, but they are terrified. They are afraid. And I think that that fear, that emotional response, is absolutely the kind of response that any reasonable human being would have in the face of an empty tomb. It recognizes, Luke wants us to know that this is an unsettling experience. These uncharted waters that you speak of are not taken lightly by the gospel writers. They don't gloss over it. They don't expect you to hear this and to think to yourself, well, obviously, if we think that, if we get to that conclusion, I would make the argument that we have been inoculated to the shocking nature of this message. The idea that the gospel writers want us to know that in the face of what should be death, there was life. And that's a terrifying prospect because what in our life has prepared us for that possibility? What could we compare that to? None of us have experienced that in the way that these women that first day did. And I think it's the fear that's listed in every gospel in some way, and it is included here, this terrifying reality at the presence of these men. And I think that's extrapolatable to the experience that they're having in general. It's that fear that in some ways I think gives weight to the experience that Luke is describing here, because they are truly walking on uncharted territory. They are in a place no human had been before, and they are not understanding it, either at a mental or an emotional level.
Yeah, and it's not the last time we'll see that word. We'll see it again when Jesus appears to the disciples. And the other thing, I suppose there's a possibility, Michael, that if we thought about it, it would surprise us. You know, Luke has taken 24 chapters, 23 and a half chapters to get us to this point. This has been where the story is heading. Luke writes long chapters. He's given us stories, given us speeches. He's given us all kinds of these various aspects of Jesus' experience. And it may, in that context, be surprising that he gives us 12 verses about the resurrection.
Yeah.
The Bible, as much as it dominates our conversation in the modern world, the Bible is not particularly interested in proving the claim of resurrection. The Bible is fascinated with the question, what does it mean? But it doesn't feel compelled to say, well, because this happened and this happened and this person saw it and that person saw it. That's in there. I won't argue that that's not in parts of the Gospels or parts of the New Testament, but it's not the theme you would think. You would expect an entire chapter from Luke on why this happened, on who saw it, on proving it. And because it's a faith question, I really believe it's just not something the Bible has a great deal of it, not something it makes a great deal of effort to quote unquote prove. It simply presents it as a fact and then asks, what did people do with it? And then ultimately, what will you do with it? And I think, you know, again, to the point of credibility, it's not how you would do it if you were trying to start a religion, if you were trying to, I just think the character of it is very interesting. And unfortunately or fortunately, I don't know which, it doesn't always answer the questions we might prefer that it did.
Clint, I think that's an absolutely essential point. And I think I would only add to it just by way of illustrating it. In this text that we have here in front of us here today, note how little of it is narrative, how little of it is descriptive, and how much of it is people. It's naming the women. It's naming Peter. It is talking about the things that these women are doing. How often Luke is dedicating the small amount of time that is used to describe the resurrection and is telling us about some disciples' encounter with it, some response to it. It's relational and it's personal. It has a name, each one of these people in their story. I would argue because while the New Testament is certainly trying to provide for us a reliable account of Jesus's death and resurrection, it is also simultaneously trying to introduce us to the men and the women, and in this case, first the women, who will be our mothers and fathers of faith, the ones who pass on the good news, the reliable witnesses who invite us to consider what will be our response. Will we respond in faith to, of course, in terror, but also with amazement, and then later in deep faith to respond to the empty tomb and for that to become the living, beating heart of our own faith and life? Is how will we respond to your point? And I just think while we might be interested in answering you what might be the modern questions of the text, the scientific stuff, the logistical, historical stuff, that interests us, and that's fine. But we should note and even should be challenged by the biblical writers who were answering different concerns. And the concerns that they're answering, I think, if we hear them rightly, are maybe the deeper concerns of the faith. And I think, Clint, that if we are willing to see the brevity of the text and understand the importance of the people in the text, it might also empower us as we move further into Luke. And then, of course, if you would study the book of Acts, you're going to see how personal the response to this gospel was for each and every one of these men and women, and the way that it transformed not just their world, but ultimately it's this moment in their faith that will translate, or that will rather change the entire world. And Luke wants us to know that it's all connected down the line.
Yeah, and I would say, Michael, to give maybe a commercial for tomorrow, that perhaps the best example of that is the passage we will look at tomorrow, in which outsiders, and to my remembering, Luke is the only one who does this, who takes outsiders and gives them a resurrection experience. And so I think our text tomorrow will definitely fall along those lines.
We certainly hope that you will join us for that. Maybe the easiest way to get those notifications is to subscribe, hit the bell icon for every time that we will have one of these live streams. And then, of course, give this video a like. The resurrection story helps other people in the midst of their own studies of Luke in all of the years to come. It'll help them find it, and hopefully it will also be a help to them. Thanks for being with us here today. We will see you tomorrow.
Thanks, everybody.